The lights go down, the picture fires up, and with LG, your couch becomes the front row. From late-night streaming to game-day watch parties, LG OLED and QNED TVs make every screen moment bigger, brighter, and easier to love. With smart features that feel effortless and sleek design that looks beautiful even when the screen is off. Because when it's LG, movie night doesn't just happen. It becomes the event. Bring the theater home with LG. See the latest OLED and QNED TVs now at LG.com.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 38, Christina's Story. Tonight, we're on the case in Monterey, California, just 2 hours south of San Francisco. It was here, in the shadows of the city's famed Cannery Row, that 13-year-old Christina Williams mysteriously vanished while walking her dog. The search for the teenager brought friends, family, and celebrities out in force. But even that massive effort failed to bring her home. And as the days passed without new leads, it slowly became clear that her disturbing story would have a heartbreaking ending. June 12, 1998. It was just after 7 on a warm summer evening when Alice Williams got home from a long day at work. The exhausted mother slumped into her couch as her 13-year-old daughter, Christina, asked if she could take her dog, Greg, for a walk on the Fort Ord military base where they lived.
Christina said, "I think Greg wants to walk." I said, "Okay, but don't stay long."
Alice closed her eyes and dozed off. She woke up to bad news.
My son woke me up. He said, "Mom, Christina was not home yet." Then I look at the time. I said, "Oh my gosh, it's been a long time, almost hours. She's gone."
Alice, her husband Michael, and their children had just moved to Fort Ord. The sprawling former Army base was now the home to thousands of military families. Alice was concerned that Christina had gotten lost in her new surroundings.
I told my son, "Get your bike and ride around and look for Christina." About 15, 20 minutes, he come back. He said, "Mom, I didn't see Christina."
Alice stepped outside, and her fear turned into full-blown panic. She saw Christina's dog, Greg, coming up the street with his leash dragging behind him. Her husband, Chief Petty Officer Mike Williams, pulled into the driveway as the terrifying scene unfolded.
I got home about 8:45, and my wife was standing outside. As soon as I got out, she said that Christina is missing. And I said, "What do you mean by missing?" Then she mentioned that Greg came back trailing its leash. Obviously, that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mike Williams immediately drove to the base police station to report Christina missing.
I went over there and I informed them that our daughter went to walk her dog and had to return.
Mike was stunned. He knew his daughter had just arrived on the base. Christina had no friends or relatives in the area. But Mike believed it was a safe place to raise his kids, so foul play had never crossed his mind.
We've never really even thought of any potential problems because, it's a military base.
As base police began their search, they were confident they would find the teenager.
They said, "She's going to show up. There must be a simple answer."
But Mike Williams couldn't come up with a single comforting thought about why his daughter had not come home. He knew that Fort Ord had been a huge training facility. It had hundreds of heavily wooded acres and fields filled with tall grass and overgrown brush. Finding a small girl in the darkness would be a daunting task.
There's a lot of trails. I brought Greg with me to see if Greg would pick up anything. So I just walked calling her name and hoping that she would answer.
The passage of time was a constant enemy, and Mike felt powerless against its advance. As her loved ones waited for news about Christina that night, her father tried to remain strong for the sake of his family.
I tried to avoid thinking anything bad.
But the thought of his daughter alone in the dark was impossible for him to ignore.
Just numerous things running through my head.
Even after 24 hours had passed with no word of Christina's whereabouts, Mike still remained positive.
I was still holding out hope that she just got lost.
The Williams family turned to the media for help, and Christina's disappearance became front page news across the area. The disturbing story caught the attention of FBI Special Agent Rick Lack.
The FBI often gets involved in child abduction cases if local law enforcement will ask us to. We bring a lot of money, manpower, and experience that a lot of local police departments simply can't generate.
Agent Lack led a massive interagency effort to find the 13-year-old. Last seen wearing Adidas flip-flops and her older brother's Oakland Raiders jacket.
There were hundreds of agents and law enforcement that were working the case, 24/7. We didn't care what time it was, we were going to find this little girl. We had the search and rescue team out there with hundreds of volunteers literally searching Fort Ord in a concentric circle, working their way out.
But 3 days into the investigation, the task force still hadn't found a single clue related to Christina's disappearance, which led Agent Lack to a terrifying thought.
This was an abduction. We had on our hands a rank stranger abduction. I hoped I was wrong, but I felt in my heart of hearts I was not.
Agent Lack's theory gained even more steam after specially trained canine units were called in to search for her.
The tracking dogs tracked Christina's scent from her backyard behind me to the left onto Parker Flats Cutoff, and in this general area, her scent disappeared.
The location where Christina's trail suddenly ended was in the middle of the street. That led Special Agent Lack to believe that the 13-year-old had been abducted by someone in a car.
I just felt, you know something? That's where she ran across a predator. That one in a billion chance, and it never happens until it happens.
The hopes of finding the teenager alive were fading. Everyone involved in the case was acutely aware that they were racing against the clock.
No one wanted to go home. We were working at 24/7. The effort was incredible. I mean, I had never seen anything like it in my time in the FBI, of the dedication of the searchers and the lead covers. Everybody wanted that lead to find this young lady. And I tell you, the dedication still chokes me up when I think about it.
While the search for Christina was in full force, the FBI began tracking down all the usual suspects.
The 290 registrants, which are sex offenders, that's a natural lead you do on a case like this.
Detectives interviewed and investigated all the registered sex offenders in the area, but they couldn't find anything linking them to Christina.
We have to keep working.
Christina was a loving daughter, sister, and friend who had become a household name in the worst way possible.
It was the story in California, and it got nationwide coverage. Every day, all the major networks were there. Our bosses, our special agents in charge, and our ASACs had news conferences to alert the public because we were also asking for the public's assistance.
From the very beginning, we just had an outpouring from the community doing whatever they could to support us.
The massive amount of publicity generated dozens of new leads. One of them was from the wife of a Navy officer. She had been out jogging in the Fort Ord area the night Christina was abducted. Special Agent John O'Brien.
She had stopped during her run and was stretching, and two individuals pulled up in a Ford Granada or Mercury Monarch, and she recalls them saying words to the effect of, "She's too old," and then they took off.
At the time, the young woman had dismissed the incident, but news of Christina's possible abduction made it seem incredibly important. Although the woman wasn't able to remember the car's license plate, she did provide police with a clear description of the men. The FBI had her sit with an artist to create two composite sketches. FBI spokesman George Grotz.
What we know for sure is that these are the two individuals that verbally accosted her. We believe that these are the same individuals that are responsible for Christina's abduction.
Police were chasing down leads on potential suspects when another tip came into the FBI's rapid response line, one that seemed to give the Navy wife's concerns even more validity. This caller said they had seen a scared teenager in the back of a mid-sized sedan.
This juvenile, who appeared to be frightened, was sitting in a vehicle described as an older model Mercury Monarch or Ford Granada.
Hundreds of hours were poured into finding that sedan and the two men in the composite sketches.
We had California DMV give us a printout of every Ford Granada and Mercury Marquis that fit that description in those years. They delivered the boxes in a van. That's how many vehicles there were that fit that description, and we checked out each and every one of them.
It was the best lead investigators had, but they weren't even certain if the car was actually involved in Christina's disappearance.
We went to great extremes to locate those two people in that car, and I had lost confidence in them being involved for the simple reason that if they had been involved, we would have found them.
Weeks turned into months, and the holiday season passed with an empty seat at the Williams table. Still, Christina's mother refused to give up hope that her daughter would return home safely.
I never give up. I keep hoping that we'll get her back. I don't think about something that bad happened to her. I don't think about that.
Then, shortly after New Year's Day, police got their next break on the case. It was January 12, 1999, exactly 7 months to the day that Christina had vanished.
Etched in my memory forever, my Nextel jingled, and it was my partner, John Ginocchio. He goes, "We found a body. You need to get down here ASAP."
On the Case, the podcast, will continue in a moment. It was the disturbing call that no one on the Christina Williams case wanted to receive. A woman who was studying the ecosystem in Fort Ord had made a gruesome discovery while walking through one of the base's less traveled areas. She believed she had stumbled upon the remains of a young girl. As Special Agent Rick Lack raced to the scene, he knew in his heart that Christina had just been found.
I had anticipated this from early on in the investigation, that our chances of finding her alive were slim. We found a body on January 12, 1999, under this old scrub oak tree. Branches had been broken off of an adjacent tree and placed over the body in order to hide the remains.
The body was unrecognizable due to decomposition, but what was found in the brush left little doubt that the victim was Christina Williams.
Her jeans were there. The top she had on was there, and her black and silver Oakland Raiders jacket was there, and her flip-flops were laying alongside where she had been placed.
The jacket, jeans, and flip-flops were an exact match to those Christina had been wearing when she left to walk her dog. Special Agent John O'Brien.
That is certainly not what we had hoped, but at that stage, our focus was what evidence could we gain from the crime scene to go forward to find the perpetrator.
Investigators searched the area, hoping to find clues of what had happened. Forensic anthropologist Allison Galloway.
The area where the body had been put initially was under some live oak trees. Under those trees, you'll get poison oak growing, and it's very, very dense.
Police believe that wild animals in the area had moved some of the evidence out into the open, or it may never have been discovered.
Had it not been for the critters out there, she may never have been found.
Ultimately, it was dental records that conclusively identified the victim as Christina Williams.
Dr. Landon was transported out to the crime scene. I had Christina's dental records provided me by her father early on in the investigation. I said, "Doc, is that her?" And he goes, "Yes, it is. That's her."
Investigators now had the difficult task of breaking the news to the Williams family. Christina's father, Michael Williams.
By then, we knew that the odds of her coming back safely was small. We knew that obviously something bad probably happened. And when they found her remains, yeah, we just kind of sat there.
After informing the Williams family, the FBI held a press conference to confirm the terrible news. FBI spokesman George Grotz.
It is my sad duty to announce that the body found January 12, 1999 is that of Christina Williams. I hope you understand that this is a very sad time for the Williams family. It is also a very sad time for the investigative family.
The medical examiner ruled that Christina had been murdered, but her autopsy results did little to advance the investigation.
There was no clear indication of how she was killed.
Anthropologist Allison Galloway theorized that Christina had been strangled to death, although her age made it impossible to be certain.
There's bones that you would see in the throat that could get broken if somebody is manually strangled. In a person of Christina's age, they will just fold in.
Investigators were confident Christina had been the victim of a sexual assault, but they were not able to collect biological evidence at autopsy. Still, analysts hope that testing of other evidence at the crime scene might provide them with a lead on her assailant. But the lab report came back stating there was nothing found on any of Christina's clothing. It was a huge blow to the investigation and left agents extremely disappointed.
As disappointed and as frustrated as I've ever been in an investigation in my life in the FBI. When all that came back, that there was nothing that was going to point me toward a suspect, I was devastated.
The discovery of Christina's body had not advanced the investigation, but it gave her family a sense of finality that many parents of missing children never get.
I don't know how parents who have missing children and don't know what happened to their child make it.
As investigators worked around the clock to try and solve the case, Christina's family prepared to bury their youngest daughter.
Christina was just a wonderful child and quiet, reserved, but really was very helpful, very courteous, and I have mentioned it a number of times that I don't ever remember even having to discipline her. She was just a pleasure to have in our family, and yeah, we miss her a great deal.
One of the greatest challenges the Williams faced was accepting that Christina would never get to live out her dreams. She hoped to walk in the footsteps of her hero, Mariah Carey. She had a beautiful voice and wanted to share it with the world.
She was in the school chorus. She loved to sing.
Christina's murder left every parent in the area fearing that their child could be next.
The community was just wrecked at that time. People were afraid to have their kids go outside and play.
The FBI's Behavioral Science Department put together a profile of Christina's killer. One element in particular struck a chord with investigators.
The profilers told me whoever did this was incredibly familiar with Fort Ord, which can be a complicated place. This is someone with an incredible knowledge of all the nooks and crannies.
The task force believed the killer was a resident of the area, perhaps even someone who had been based on Fort Ord.
I'd been in the area a long, long time. I had never been there in my life. This is not a marked street you drive on to get there. This is a dirt, rough road that a vehicle can drive on with some care, but it's not a road that people typically ever drove down.
Still, the FBI report did little to narrow the pool of potential suspects. And without a new witness or physical evidence, the investigation ground to a halt for a second time. Investigators began to fear they might never be able to bring Christina's killer to justice.
That was always in the back of my mind. We found her body. And that has yielded nothing. We may never solve this case.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. Just as the investigation was in danger of going cold, the FBI got a tip from a man about a potential new witness. Senior resident, Agent Rick Lack.
He said, Agent Lack, I'm really nervous. I've never talked to the FBI before, but I think you need to talk to Linda Silver.
And then the tipster explained why. He said that Linda Silver had chilling information about a former boyfriend. She believed he should be looked at as a suspect in the Christina Williams murder. She said her ex, Charles Holyfield, knew Fort Ord like the back of his hand. In particular, the area where the body had been found.
He said, Linda told me that she has spent time with Holyfield at that body site. She has been out there many times with him. This is one of his favorite places on Fort Ord. She described it to a T.
Investigators did a deep dive into Charles Holyfield's background and immediately saw details that connected him to the FBI profile. Reporter John DeSantis.
Charles Holyfield grew up an Army kid on Fort Ord. His father was a United States Army sergeant. And the house where Holyfield was living when he was a kid and into his teens was a house that was not that far away from the house where Christina and her family were living.
But perhaps most chilling was Holyfield's criminal history. He was a registered sex offender whose most recent crime was the attempted kidnapping of a young woman.
3 months after Christina Williams was abducted, an attempted abduction took place in Marina, California, which is just north of Fort Ord. A young lady was out jogging, and a red pickup truck pulled up alongside her. Window was down. The person inside pointed a gun at her. Words to the effect of, get in the car or I'll kill you.
The woman escaped and was able to guide police to her would-be abductor. It turned out that the man behind the wheel of the red truck was Charles Holyfield. Holyfield was arrested and convicted of attempted kidnapping and sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. He was already behind bars when Agent Lack got in touch with Linda Silver about Holyfield's potential involvement in the murder of Christina Williams.
I told her that she may be the one person on the face of this earth right now who has information that I need to resolve the Christina Williams investigation.
Linda was moved by Agent Lack's commitment to getting justice for Christina and agreed to tell him the chilling details of her relationship with Charles Holyfield and his connection to the desolate area where Christina Williams' body was found.
On one occasion when they were out by that body site, she told me, we had a very loud argument. He said, you know something, Linda, if I were to kill you and dump your body out here in this area, you would never be found.
Linda's story indicated that Holyfield already knew the area was remote enough to cover up a savage crime. But Agent Lack needed to be certain that Linda was talking about the exact same spot. He and the young woman drove to Fort Ord. She led him right to the oak tree where Christina had been found.
She took us there. She says, I've been up and down this road 30 to 50 times with him.
Linda Silver's story moved Charles Holyfield to the top of Agent Lack's list.
That changed the whole focus of the Christina Marie Williams investigation.
Agent Lack decided to try and speak with Holyfield behind bars.
If there was a shot, if there was this much of a chance that he would talk to me about Christina Williams or maybe even take the polygraph, I was going to give it a shot.
But when he finally came face to face with the convicted criminal, Holyfield was adamant that he had nothing to do with Christina's murder.
He wanted to convince me that he's innocent.
It quickly became clear that Holyfield was just toying with the investigators. He had no intention of answering any questions. In fact, Holyfield said that on the afternoon of Christina's abduction, he was with his new girlfriend, Lisa Johnson, and her mother. He claimed the two women would back up his story.
He had an alibi, but I had come to believe that that was probably crap.
Investigators spoke with Holyfield's girlfriend, and she stuck by his account. Police sensed she was lying, but the verified alibi made it nearly impossible to move the case against Holyfield forward. Prosecutors were worried that there wasn't enough to get a conviction at trial.
That was discussed with my line prosecutor, Assistant U.S. Attorney Marcia Jensen. The fact that he knew the locales where her body was found, where she was abducted, his knowledge of Fort Ord, his past criminal history. AUSA Jensen told me, we could try it, but I don't think we would be successful. It's too thin. It's only circumstantial.
Agent Rick Lack was convinced Charles Holyfield murdered Christina Williams, but he couldn't prove it. He retired in 2004 without being able to solve the case.
The fact that I could not solve that during my tenure in the FBI before I retired was incredibly frustrating.
It was frustrating, but the FBI refused to give up. A new team took over the investigation. At the helm was Special Agent Rick Lack's hand-picked replacement, John O'Brien. O'Brien also believed that convicted sex offender Charles Holyfield was Christina's killer. With new advancements in DNA testing, Agent O'Brien gathered all of Christina's clothing for additional analysis.
I took all the crime scene evidence and I brought it down to the state lab for testing.
O'Brien also meticulously went through the huge case file until a small detail in a published report caught his attention.
I remember coming across a newspaper article. It was a 2.5-page article on why Charles Holyfield should be looked at as a main subject in this investigation.
Throughout the years, Holyfield had refused to speak with police, but he had maintained a running dialogue from behind bars with the Monterey Herald's crime reporter, John DeSantis.
After this story ran, that telephone rang, and I picked it up, and on the other end of the line was Charles Holyfield. The first thing he said to me was, "Your story is wrong." And I said to him, "What's wrong with the story?" And his answer was, "The birthday that you put in for me is not right. You were a day off." Considering everything that we had written, this was chilling.
Holyfield also gave DeSantis a comment about the discovery of Christina's body.
Mr. Holyfield told me he could not have been the person that had killed her. They're not going to find that it was he who put her under some bushes.
To the average reader, the quote seemed like a typical denial. But Special Agent O'Brien believed that Holyfield had made a critical mistake.
At no time was it disclosed that the actual original site that Christina's body was found was under bushes. Only the killer would know that.
On the Case, the podcast, will continue in a moment. As incriminating as his statements seemed, O'Brien knew it still wasn't the piece of the puzzle he was missing in order to charge Charles Holyfield with murder. Then, the state crime lab provided him just what he needed. Male DNA had been found on Christina's underwear. Special Agent John O'Brien.
I was stunned. I was shocked and elated.
And there was more. The DNA profile was strong enough to be entered into CODIS.
I knew it was going to be Charles Holyfield. There was no doubt in my mind. In my mind, it could be no one else.
And Agent O'Brien was right. The DNA was a match to Charles Holyfield. The Christina Williams murder case had finally been solved. He immediately picked up the phone to call his good friend, Rick Lack.
John called me on my cell phone, and he goes, "Guess what? We've got Charles Holyfield's DNA on Christina Williams' panties."
The retired agent was stunned. A mystery that had haunted him for years had finally been solved.
And I thought, hot damn. After all these years, we found him.
Agent Lack was relieved. In his heart, he knew that Holyfield had killed Christina. But until now, there was no way of proving it.
After all these years, absent marriage, the birth of my daughters and those things, that was probably the happiest I've ever been. I was ecstatic.
Investigators from the Monterey County DA's office asked to meet with Holyfield behind bars to discuss the Christina Williams case. And surprisingly, Holyfield agreed.
Do you know her? Do I know her? I know who she is. I don't know her name.
But Holyfield's confident veneer was shattered when investigators confronted him with the DNA evidence that proved he was lying.
I never had any kind of sex with her.
Okay.
All right. I didn't abduct her. I didn't kill her. To say that my sperm was on her is a lie. It's just straight up lie.
For prosecutors on the case, the denial was almost as strong as a confession.
We will be charging Mr. Holyfield with first-degree murder.
Deputy District Attorney Matt Leroux believed he had a compelling story to present to a jury.
We had Holyfield intimately connected with the area where Christina was abducted and ultimately the area where her body was found. And we had Charles Holyfield's sperm on Christina's underwear. 1 in 46 octillion would have that same profile, which is a billion, billion, billion.
Still, Matt and his colleague, Prosecutor Lindsay O'Shea, had several challenges ahead of them. Holyfield waived his right to a jury trial and asked that his case be decided by the judge. Despite their pain, the Williams family was in the courtroom every day. They wanted Christina's killer to face the family whose lives had been changed forever due to his brutal crime. For Mike Williams, seeing Holyfield up close and personal brought out a whole range of emotions.
As a father, I thought of lots of ways of getting revenge. But as a person, as a human, you just don't act on this intense hatred and intense a desire for revenge.
Prosecutors painted a moving portrait of the sweet, innocent girl that had been savagely murdered.
Deputy District Attorney Matt LaRoe.
We wanted the judge to know that Christina was a very kind, sweet, compassionate girl who loved her family, who did everything right, who followed all the rules. The only reasonable explanation for Christina being found deceased where she was is that he kidnapped her and killed her.
Prosecutors presented evidence that proved that Holyfield had the motive and opportunity to commit the crime. And they presented their theory on what they think happened on the night Christina was kidnapped.
Deputy District Attorney Lindsay O'Shea.
Christina was taking her dog for a walk. I think he pulled what at least looked like a gun on her. I believe that that's what got her to leave her dog that she dearly loved behind and get in the car with him. I believe that he marched her out to that grove, that he sexually assaulted and strangled her to death.
The judge then heard compelling testimony from Holyfield's ex-girlfriend, Linda Silver.
What Linda Silver did was really tie the defendant, Holyfield, to the scene where Christina's body was found. That was an area that he felt comfortable in, having sex there, doing illegal drugs there. It was clearly sort of a home to him. And it was a place where he would feel safe taking a young girl, raping her, killing her, and he would believe that he would get away with it because he knew that place like the back of his hand.
The state rested its case knowing that Holyfield's only chance was to create reasonable doubt. His defense team hoped that the judge would believe the alibi Holyfield's girlfriend Lisa Johnson had provided him, but prosecutors were ready. They had a plan on how to discredit anything Lisa Johnson told the judge.
My plan consisted of destroying her credibility. She said on the stand she wasn't afraid of him.
She said, "He was never violent with me."
But during cross-examination, prosecutors showed Lisa Johnson had been frightened by Holyfield's violent outbursts. They played a 911 call she made that contradicted her testimony.
"He's tearing up the thing. I'm afraid of him. I have a restraining order against him. Can you please come up?"
"What's his name?"
"Charles Allen Holyfield."
Despite all the evidence, prosecutors were still uncertain of what the outcome would be at the conclusion of the trial. As the judge went out to deliberate, prosecutors second-guessed themselves.
"Just running over every little thing, did I miss one element? Did we not present everything that we needed to? Was there any way that she was actually going to buy one of the defense's many, many, many theories of how he actually was not the responsible party?"
But the verdict made it clear the prosecutors had done their job. Charles Holyfield was found guilty of first-degree murder. It was a huge relief for the Williams family. Christina's mother, Alice Williams.
"It means a lot that this guy can hurt any kids anymore. Christina got justice."
For Agent Rick Lack, who worked tirelessly to find Christina's killer, the guilty verdict meant he could finally close the chapter on the case that had continued to trouble him long after he retired.
"When I heard those words, I have never felt relief, satisfaction, and happiness, not just for me. That was my job. But looking over to my right at Michael, Alice, and Jennifer Williams, the relief on their faces. We looked at each other, sitting beside me, kind of grinned, thumbs up, and then we heard the rest of the sentencing that day.
It's a moment he will relish forever.
It's hard to explain in words and still try to be professional and not jump up on top of the pews and jump up and down and go, yeah, 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 yeah.
Christina's father made his own feelings clear when he addressed the court during the sentencing hearing.
I wanted the judge to know what Christina went through and what our family and the community went through.
The judge appeared to have taken his words to heart. Charles Holyfield was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. For prosecutor Lindsay O'Shea, the sentence could not have been more appropriate. She believes that if Holyfield ever got out of prison, he was certain to kill again.
I have never met a defendant that quite personified evil such as he does. There's something about his eyes. There's some coldness, some hardness there. I've talked to other experienced prosecutors who got a chill when he was in the room. It's just he gave off this aura of evil.
The verdict was a final resolution to the most painful chapter of the Williams lives.
There's a lot of memories for Christina that I will never ever forget. Every time I look at those pictures, it tears up my heart.
And there is not a day that goes by where her parents don't think of their beloved daughter.
We miss her every single day. Her birthday, the day that she was missing, the day that her remains were found, those days obviously bring it up a lot. It's something that lives on in us forever.
Christina Williams continues to touch lives. After philanthropist J. Michael Mahoney heard about the teenager's heartbreaking story, he endowed a scholarship at the University of California, Berkeley, in Christina's name. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial. Or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.